It's rare in Wisconsin when our seasons change gradually. It seems like this month, no exception. All of a sudden, it's really feeling like fall out there. And you know that if you're feeling it, your garden plants are too. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Pleased to have back Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based garden expert and author of more than 20 books, including the brand new Minnesota and Wisconsin Month by Month Gardening. She's also the host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and we love it when she comes to join us. Melinda, always a pleasure.
Oh, same here, Larry. Always great to chat with you and your listeners as well and talk gardening, even on a chilly morning like today.
Oh, yeah, it's chilly. It does make me think about kind of about fall garden cleanup. I'm looking at my garden and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I've got to leave the tomatoes in. Tomatoes are still producing, but it won't be long, and you know, the tomatoes and all the rest of it's going to have to be cleaned up. And it is important to do that, isn't it?
Oh, you bet. You know, anything that was disease-ridden or insect-infested especially needs to be cleaned up. In your garden, definitely get that material out. Compost those things that weren't disease or insect-ridden, and then dispose of the others in the way that your municipality allows. Some allow you to put small quantities of material into the landfill buried deep so the disease organisms don't reinfect next year. For your perennial garden, though, if it's been healthy, leave it stand. The birds love the seeds. It's great winter interest. Last year, sometimes we had trouble seeing that winter interest under the snow, but when the snow melted, the, you know, seed heads of the grasses are beautiful, the seed pods from the perennials. But anything that's disease-ridden or had problems with insects, get it out of the garden. And so you might want to start kind of putting together your cleanup list, but at the same time, this is a great time to plant as well. It's hard to imagine that this morning with it being so chilly, but it's a great time to plant. The soil is warm, the air is cool, less stressful for your plants. You know what did well, you know what didn't make it after the tough winter, and, you know, some of us were waiting on a few plants. We'll give it a little more time, and maybe they didn't turn around like you'd hope. So a lot of the garden centers and nurseries have wonderful, you know, fresh plant material available. Mums and asters are great for filling those voids and making things look good till mm-hmm. the first snow starts to fly.
Yeah, and pretty inexpensive now, as you...
Usually, exactly. So a lot of things are on sale. You know, they're looking at lightening the load in their nursery lot and just look for some good, healthy plants. And, you know, a lot of times, too, we've had such a rainy year, and I don't know yeah. about a lot of people, but I just got a lot of plants in the ground last weekend, finally, that I'd been healing in from my old house that I bought earlier. I'm a gardener first, I think, mm-hmm. just like everybody. And so now I can go out and buy some new stuff to fill in those little voids, some asters and mums to dress up that bed until those shrubs take off. So it's a good time to plant, whether you've been saving it or you need to go out and invest in a few things.
Yeah, it's really a good time, fun time to do that. Are your tomatoes still producing?
They are. It's been I got a late start in my garden, like so many people. I started a new garden, and the weather's been cool, so I'm still getting tomatoes. One thing, keep in mind, that as they're starting to turn, you know, they go to that whitish green and show a little color. You can ripen them indoors, so... You know, those folks in northern Wisconsin, you know, when you hear the danger of frost and if you're tired of covering, you might want to bring them in. I'm having a battle with the ground squirrels and they're winning. So they take a bite out of one, and I think everybody can relate, then they go to the next one and take a bite. So I've been picking things a little bit underripe and bringing them indoors, hoping that I can have an equal share of the harvest this year.
Oh, man. Melinda Myers, our guest today on this edition of Garden Talk. You can join in. If you have a gardening question, I hope you'll visit with us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your question, comment, or your garden photo there. And we did have a question on Facebook, and I'm trying to locate who it was that brought it up, and I'm just not seeing it right now. But her question had to do with giant ragweed, which she has in abundance, apparently, wondering how to get rid of it. And Judith Sears Poisson, my producer, has the same issue in her backyard. So she said, boy, let me know what Melinda says about giant ragweed.
It's been a great year for giant ragweed and common ragweed. They're in full bloom right now. They have green flowers. So they're kind of, the flowers aren't real noticeable. Usually we see the goldenrod that grows nearby, and those of us that suffer hay fever, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know, and it's been a tough year for allergies, I think. And so you'll often see the ragweed, it gets blamed, but it's, I mean the goldenrod, but it's the ragweed hiding. It's an annual, so of course, if you can pull it before it sets seed, mowing if it's in an area that tends to get mowed, mulching will help reduce any kind of weed issue. You usually find ragweed growing in along edge rows, roadways, places that aren't maintained and managed, and then they set thousands of seed for next year. So it's really, you almost need to get the whole neighborhood involved in terms of removing it. Because it is, it's not, you know, you can spray, but you want to make sure you're not going to kill the other plants, and it's an annual, so you want to make sure you kill it before it sets seed, otherwise you really miss that window of opportunity. So the best thing, if you can pull it, if that's realistic, at least mow it down, and then try to make notes of where you're seeing it, and you'll start going, oh yeah, this makes sense. It's kind of right along the road, maybe, or it's in the area between the woods and the mowed grass, or it's popping up in your garden. And so anything that prevents the seeds from germinating, mulching, great way to do that. And then mowing, if it's coming up in the lawn, that will keep it cut down. And then try to just kind of monitor those areas that may be left a little wild. And if your surrounding plants are healthier, they'll help crowd it out. But they're vigorous plants, and they're called weeds for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't have an easy solution. You know, it's pulling, it's mulching, it's removing, it's mowing.
Yeah.
I know. I feel her pain, and it sounds like you do too, Larry.
Oh, yes, I do. And my eyes are watering as we speak, as a matter of fact. I can barely make out the screen, as a matter of fact. So, yes, I understand completely. But, it struck a chord when you said getting the community involved. And this is off a little bit different tack. But I had Jim LaLuzerne on my show yesterday, and Jim is an eyeglass guy. But he's also quite a horticulturist, too, in his own right. And he's gotten his community together on a community-wide tree planting. And so they have, in their community, a number of species listed, a number of species of trees that you could plant in the community. And what they're trying to do is to getting different people within the community to plant the different trees. And I thought, what a wonderful idea.
And, you know, and that just brings up a great point that it doesn't have to be the tree, and maybe he is on the tree board, but it doesn't have to be a horticulturist or an arborist. Citizens can make a huge difference. And with the whole emerald ash borer concern, you know, a native plants that are suffering from emerald ash borer, and it's going to really change the way our urban forest looks. By diversifying, we can really be proactive, not only with this issue, but other issues that we don't even know are coming up in the future. So what a great strategy. And then how much more beautiful will our communities be by doing that? And then we all know that trees, you know, purify the air, they help with stormwater management, they help save energy costs. And I also think one thing I lived in the city for a long time, and so I didn't have a lot of room for a lot of trees, but as a community, Milwaukee was very good about planting street trees and planting trees in green spaces, which benefited all of us that couldn't really squeeze in one more tree on our small city lot. So it's also helping, even if that tree isn't in your front yard or backyard, it's helping the community as a whole with that whole heat island effect. So what a great idea. What a good inspiration for all of us.
I loved it. I thought, and it's just something that you hope that builders might take into consideration when new communities are sort of planned, neighborhoods are put in. So, yeah, something to think about for sure. And Judy's got something for us to think about as well from Oak Creek, so let's go to her. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Melinda. I'm a longtime follower of yours.
Thank you.
I have two yucca plants, one that has flowered a little bit, one that hasn't flowered at all. I put them in between some bushes, and the bushes have overgrown around them. So I'd like to move them to a more open area, hoping that they'll do well there. Is this a good time to move them?
Yes, you can move them now. You could also move them early in the season. With summer bloomers, kind of the general rule of thumb is if they bloom in the summer, you can move them spring or late summer, early fall, like now. Bloom in the spring, move them in the fall, bloom in the fall, move in the spring, and every gardener knows you move them when you have to. But yes, this would be a great time to do it. And you're right, more sunlight, a hotter location, more likely to bloom for you. And also, yuccas tend to be biennial bloomers, meaning they'll often bloom
Okay.
So they'll bloom great 1 year, rest a year, bloom the next year, rest a year. So it's nothing you're doing. It just that's often the way the plant reacts. So I think you're right. Get it in a good sunny location. If you don't get to it real soon, do it in the spring. I like this time of year. Again, the soil's warm, the air's cool. It gives the plants time to establish. And I think gardeners have a huge list of things to do in the spring also.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things that if you can get it done now, it's going to happen versus next July going, I didn't get around to it.
There you go.
Can I ask you one more question, please?
Okay.
I have some wisteria growing, and it's been 3 years, and it's vigorously growing, but not one flower. Is it not conducive to our area?
Well, there's a good question, Judy. I'm glad you asked. There's the Asiatic, the Chinese and Japanese wisteria that are plant-hardy but not flower-bud hardy. So the plants will grow and thrive, but they won't bloom. Now, the American or Kentucky wisteria is hardy. The flower buds form on new growth, and so it flowers smaller flowers with the leaves. So it's not that long, you know, 2-foot-long wisteria flowers on bare stems, but it's hardy. But it does take about 5 to 7 years for the plants to reach maturity before they start blooming.
There you go.
And if it makes you feel better, Judy, I moved my wisteria, and it was just in the ground about 5 years, and I'm like, I'm starting over again.
There you go.
I feel your pain and impatience.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. And let's turn to Jackie in Milwaukee. Jackie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Congratulations on the way you have grown.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm not talking about Larry. I've been listening for a long, long time. But I have, my question is roses. I had a Graham Thomas rose for 10 years, beautiful, yellow, never sprayed it, never did anything. It did beautifully. Last winter, I lost knockout roses and my beloved yellow, wonderful scented Graham Thomas. Now, I've got 3 new Graham Thomas I've put into the ground. They're small. They're budding. They're getting leaves. I've never protected a rose bush in my life, and I wonder if I should give them, they're in 3 different locations, and I wonder if I should give them some protection this year.
You know, I've some friends were making fun of me because I was quoting the Farmer's Almanac saying that they're predicting a colder than normal winter, and I said, I hope that's not based on last winter, normal. But, you know, roses are such a mystery because some years you do nothing, it's great. And the Graham Thomas, like you said, for years, good and hardy. The knockout roses, mine were very slow to come back, and they look kind of ugly, but they're alive and will look much better. I had to do some major pruning, but a lot of people lost their knockouts, Jackie. You're absolutely right. What you may want to do this year, especially since your Graham Thomas are new plantings, a cylinder of hardware cloth around the plants. You may want to even do this with the knockout. Sink it in the ground. That's to keep the voles out so that they can't get in because we're going to create a nice environment and you don't want them eating the roses. Once the ground freezes, you might want to just put some evergreen boughs or weed-free straw or marsh hay in there just to give it a little bit of insulation. Now, the thing with knockout, I was talking to the breeder, Bill. They're supposed to be on their own root, but they've got a lot of different growers growing those. So some of them are grafted. So always if you're buying knockout, just kind of check to make sure there's not a graft and it's growing on its own root. You may want to do the same thing for those folks that replace their knockouts. I've had them for 15 years and had some die back, but always they came back by the middle of June. the benefit of being a procrastinator. But I think, Jackie, it's one of those things that it might be worth putting that effort in just this first year to get them established, and especially if we have another cold winter. You know, it won't hurt anything, especially doing evergreen boughs or straw, something like that. That'll just give them that little added insulation, a little bit of insurance to keep them in case we do have another really tough winter.
Yep, there you go.
I hope not.
I hope not either. I hope you doing this will save us all from
winter. Thanks a lot, Jackie. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in too, by the way. Our guest today, Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and author of more than 20 books, including a brand new Minnesota and Wisconsin month-by-month gardening book. Great to have her along. Great to have Jason Butler, our on-air producer today. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, our certified arborist Fred Clark shares some advice for tree care and also talks about an innovative approach to local wood use. And that's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, visiting with Milwaukee-based garden guru Melinda Myers, and we're talking about fall gardening and fall garden cleanup. Again, you can join us. Have open lines. We'll get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Appreciate hearing from you. Linda in Spring Green, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
By the way, the trees are turning yellow up on the ridge down here, so it's really feeling like the birch trees. I have a question about tomatoes. I had a boom year of tomatoes, but with the cool, wet weather, the plants are giving up some, the tomatoes are drooping, and I'm picking them before they're ripe. But I've tried many different ways of ripening them, as Melinda suggested, and I'd like to hear her words on that. I mean, I've tried the bananas and the bags and the refrigerator and the sun, and I've got my own ideas, but I'd like to hear what she thinks would work.
Okay, well, great. Well, thanks for asking, and I think a lot of people will benefit from having the same problem. So here's one of the things I do. I usually keep my tomatoes, if I have a large harvest, let's say it's going to freeze or I'm going to pick a lot of them and I don't need to use them right away, I'll put them in the basement where it's cooler so it slows down the ripening process. And then about 4 days before I need them, I'll bring them up and put them in a nice warm location. So it's really the heat that's bringing that and getting it to ripen. And it's a timing issue. And usually it's also about picking them at the right stage. If they're dark green, they're going to stay green. It's going to be hard to ripen them indoors. They won't ripen. They need to start changing to that kind of whitish, lightish green. And if they show a little color, you have a much better chance. You want to only save the ones that are blemish-free, you know, those ones that the ground squirrels are munching on in my yard. I've been using them as green tomatoes or a little bit underripe just because I know they're not going to ripen up without rotting first. So blemish-free, that's worked. My dad, growing up, I still think grows the best tomatoes. And our ping pong table would be covered with tomatoes through to about Christmas, and he'd just pick everything at the end of the season and then bring about. We'd always have like four of them sitting on the counter in the kitchen where it was nice and warm, and I've kind of adopted the same habit that's worked pretty well for me.
That sounds like a great idea. We have a very small basement, so it's cool and it's dark and it's not too dry.
Yes, perfect.
Should work great.
And then, you know, one other thing for people who've never done it, spreading them out so you're not stacking them. I don't wrap mine in newspaper. That really helps if you have to push them close together. But if you can spread them out on top of newspaper or paper, just in case one goes bad, you don't ruin whatever it's sitting on. But spread them out, that's a great idea, too. That helps it reduce problems with one rotten tomato infecting the others.
Yes.
You know, I had tomatoes last year into middle November, I think.
Oh, excellent.
You know, just it was amazing.
And they do taste
better.
Do you
find that they ripen, or do they stay somewhat?
No, they would ripen, but they don't taste as good. I mean, those ones, the latest ones, don't taste, to me, they don't taste as good as the...
And part of that's the cooler temperatures, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you may even notice your tomatoes you've been picking during this cooler spell, too, are not... And my dad lives in Ohio, and I'm going to say it's the warmer summers they have down there that are making the difference. But
could be. You know, and
thank you.
On the other end,
thank you, Linda. Yes.
When you have... I had a whole lot of ripe tomatoes. And I wasn't going to, I didn't want to can them, to be perfectly honest. And I, someone on the air, on the show said, oh, I just throw them in a, I don't do anything to them. I just put them in a freezer bag and throw them in the freezer the way they are without even peeling them.
Wow.
And I thought, you know what? I have never in my life done that. So I've got about four bags of tomatoes in the freezer and, you know, they're going to be in chili or something.
Right.
So I'm really interested to see how they actually taste when they thaw out.
Well, and I have to tell you, a friend of mine, Rita Randolph from Tennessee, was giving a talk one time, and she was telling what she does with her hot peppers, Larry. She'll freeze them, and then she'll pull them out, throw them in a super stew, and when it gets the heat it needs, she rinses off the pepper, throws it back in the baggie, throws it back in the freezer. And she said she can spice up about three or four batches of soup before she puts it in the compost. So if you're short on hot peppers, you might want to try that one, too.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll have to give a report the first time I use these frozen tomatoes. I looked at them in the freezer the other day, and I thought, is this really going to work, or is this going to be just a huge disaster? Oh, boy. Well, let's go to Linda in Manitouish Waters next. Linda, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to pull over because I'm driving to Ryland to buy more plants.
Oh,
right.
This is encouraging
after my own heart. Yay.
First of all, the tomatoes, freezing the tomatoes are wonderful. I do that. And then when you thaw them out, the peelings just slide right off.
Oh, all right. Well,
the taste is there. They're good.
Perfect.
But my question is this. I've never had rose bushes before. Am I supposed to cut them down and then mulch over them for the winter? Because I leave in the late fall.
Good. I'm glad you asked that question. And I noticed that Paula Sue also posted a question on your Facebook page, Larry, about roses. So it kind of depends. I'm a believer in leaving things stand for winter, not only for winter interest, but it increases hardiness. Now, the roses we're concerned about are those that are borderline hardy in your area, and especially those that are grafted. So grafted roses, one of the methods, the old-time method that works very well, is mounding the base with about 8 to 10 inches of soil, then covering that with evergreen boughs or straw after it freezes. So basically tying up the cane. So loosely tying up the canes or putting that hardware cloth around to help hold it in place, waiting for a week of freezing temperatures. Now, that's the key I find, because if we cover them too early, you know, we're trapping that moisture, all the green leaves, and if we leave the protection on too late, that's where I find a lot of damage occurs.
Okay.
So it's kind of, it depends on the roses you're growing. Now, climbing roses, most of them set their blooms on older growth, so we want to leave those totally intact. So the folks in Minnesota do the Minnesota tip method, and even people in Wisconsin here, where they'll take a good sharp spade about a foot away from the base of the plant, cut through the roots, carefully tip the rose and lay it in the ground. Then they cover it with soil. Once that freezes, then they cover it with straw or marsh hay. Now, this is where I say a hardy rose is a good option.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work. But ramblers, old-fashioned ramblers, usually pretty hardy. So it depends on the rose, but the less pruning you do now, the better. And do your pruning in the spring and prune based on the rose you're growing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, hydrangeas. I've never had them. Somebody said if you cut them back, they'll be twice as big. Is that true?
Well, depends. You're going to love it. Depends on the hydrangea you're growing. One of the things with Annabelle hydrangeas, those are the white ones, the hills of snow. They have the round white flowers that are white.
That's the ones I have. Those are the ones I have.
Now, they... Typically, you know, you can cut them right back to the ground late winter, early spring before growth begins. But what happens, you get really tall growth, but it tends to be floppy. So one of the things that a lot of us have found, that if you cut it back to about 15 inches high, And then you could take a few of the older stems back to the ground if need be. Those older stems help support that newer growth. Plus, anytime you do severe pruning, not as much on hydrangeas, but like a forsythia, you take a forsythia down to the ground that was maybe 6 feet tall. I've seen them grow 12 feet tall the next year because you removed all the top growth. So doing gradual pruning in general helps encourage new growth, but not so vigorous that you're ending up with a bigger plant than you started with.
So, sounds good.
Yeah, so try that and see. And that works great with potentilla, the summer blooming spireas too, that tend to get floppy as well. So back 15 inches, half the stems to the ground, then the old growth supports the new growth.
Potentilla, what if I don't cut them down? Will they be okay?
Oh, yeah, they'll be fine. That's just if you're going to prune them. So thank you for asking.
Okay.
That's if you need to prune them. So pruning, you should have a reason. So I'm glad you mentioned that, Linda. Only prune if you need to control growth, if it's messy, if it's not blooming the way you want, if you've got a lot of potentillas tend to get kind of ratty looking with age. So pruning out a few stems every year is a great way to keep them looking good. But if you need to revive them a bit, or if you're a person that prunes them every year, do the method that we discussed. Thanks for asking. You don't need to prune unless there's a reason. So glad you brought that up.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Talking today with Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based garden guru. Great to have her along, and certainly great to have you listening in. Join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Carol in Oak Creek next. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I have evergreen bushes that I cut and trimmed and shaped about this time last year. And this spring, they were all brown, and I thought I lost them. But I waited all summer, and they're finally green. But again, they need to be trimmed and shaped. Do I do that now in the fall, or should I wait in the spring? I almost lost them.
Yeah. And part of it was the winter, because you drive around town, you could definitely see the evergreens took a beating. I'm not a big fan of pruning evergreens in the fall, and that we're talking about yews and junipers and arborvitaes. And the reason being is because those needles that have been out there exposed to the sunlight, the wind, all of that are nice and tough. When we prune in the fall, we expose all that inner growth that's been shaded and protected. Now it's exposed to the tough winter conditions and more likely to brown. If you need to just touch up so you can get in the door or, you know, see out the window, but if you can try doing your pruning in the spring before growth begins, and then if you need to do touch-up, midsummer they're in a somewhat dormant phase, that's the other time that you can do it. And then avoid fall. I know a lot of people do fall pruning. A lot of times it works, but I just think you increase your odds of success by doing it in spring instead of in fall after we've been through the hard winter. Plus, if there's been winter damage, you're pruning once instead of twice. You know, pruning in the fall, shaping, then removing the deadwood, you know, then waiting. So if you can wait, try to change that pruning cycle to spring, and if need be, like early July is when they go into a somewhat dormant period as well. Good for some touch-up pruning.
Oh, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you, Carol.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Ann next in Janesville. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much. I heard the question about the hydrangea. However, my question deals with the fact that my hydrangea is now just starting to bloom.
Oh. Do you have one of the, is it a white blooming or one
It's the everlasting.
It's an endless summer, maybe?
Endless summer, right.
Yeah. The thing with endless summer, so I'm glad you brought that up. When I said it depended on the hydrangea, with endless summer, it's a big leaf hydrangea, mophead hydrangea. Now, endless summer is supposed to bloom on old and new wood. We'd like to see flowers earlier, but I am seeing a lot of them just coming into bloom now. But those we want to leave stand for winter. And then in spring, see what's alive, because if any growth survives the winter, the stems that form off the old wood, the previous season's growth, will bloom earlier. That's the old wood. And then any stems that come from the ground will bloom.
Okay.
So, and in either case, I would leave it stand. And if everything dies, then cut it back at that point. Now, those of you that might have a Nikko blue or Nikko pink, or some of the other big leaf hydrangeas that only bloom on old wood, you'll want to make sure that you leave them stand for winter, do some mulching to try to protect those stems, because if they die back to the ground, they're not going to flower. And the leaves are pretty, but there's a lot of better choices.
Oh, indeed.
Than what green leaves. So the good news is you've got some blooms to enjoy. Hopefully we'll still have some warm weather yet for a while.
Oh, I'm counting on that.
I know.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, me too.
I still have a lot to do. So, yes, now, so thank you for asking about those.
And my other question was about the perennial hibiscus.
Yes.
Of course, Japanese beetles, as usual, have played havoc with them. And I just am wondering about transplanting, how easy they are to transplant and or move.
You know, I would probably wait till spring on this one just because of its borderline hardiness. You know, if you need to move it now, that's great. With the perennial hibiscus, they're hardy to zone 4, and they'll take moist soil. I've seen them up in the Twin Cities area doing well. They are late to emerge, so you want to be patient. You probably know this, but for others who maybe haven't grown it, mark the spot and don't be anxious to dig it up, because when we have a cool spring like this year, it can be pretty late when those things finally start sprouting leaves. You might be able to, you know, if you need to move it now, you could. Otherwise, spring would be a good time to do it, and if you're moving it now, you might want to, after the ground freezes, just throw a few evergreen boughs on the soil surface just for a little added insulation. And always mark the spot. The benefit of leaving this stand for winter is you know where it is. Leave part of the stem. It'll send up new growth from the ground, but at least you won't accidentally dig it up. And a lot of gardeners put bulbs around their late emerging plants so that...
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that it's kind of like the tulips are coming up or the daffodils, and it's a reminder, or it prevents you from accidentally digging up that late emerging perennial.
And how is that something that can be divided then?
It usually we don't get enough suckering growth out of them in our area to divide it. It's more of a compact plant, but if you've got lots of stems coming up, yes, you can. A good sharp. Somebody recommended a drywall saw, and I've been using that for dividing. It works
great. Oh, that's
great.
That's a great idea.
Isn't it a great idea? And I was like, wow, excellent. That's what I love about gardeners, sharing ideas. So you could try it. Mine never usually get big enough that I need to divide them or that there's enough to divide. So if you're moving it, I'd take the whole thing and then let it get reestablished before dividing it, trying to divide it.
There you go.
So I appreciate your help very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Joyce in Waniwak, you are up next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I wanted to let you know about the lazy canner freezing the tomatoes.
Yeah.
Which is what I've taken to. My sister taught me, when you take them out of the freezer, you can either run them under very hot water or have a kettle of hot water. That will make the skin slip right off, and they're then wonderful to use in any cooked dish, and you won't have that rolled up skin.
Oh, okay. So just in water.
Hot water.
Hot water. Okay.
Yes, and they'll slip right off. And I have to also tell you that my home smells of home canned fresh mincemeat pie, because that's how we use up our green ones. So many years I make a whole batch of canned that.
Oh, you make your own mincemeat pie?
Yeah, it's very popular.
Larry wants to be on your Christmas list.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You tell young people the ingredients, and they turn up their nose, though. I mean, but it's a wonderful holiday pie, so.
Oh, I love mincemeat pie. Oh,
yes.
That's wonderful.
Yep. So slip those skins off when dipping them in just hot water or running them under hot water, and they just slip right off.
You're a peach, Joyce. Thank you.
Thank you. All righty.
Bye-bye. Appreciate that. All right. Well, I'm going to remember that. I'm not sure when I'm going to first pull out that first frozen tomatoes, but I'm going to do the hot water method. Kyle in Baraboo. Hi. Thanks for calling. Kyle, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Kyle.
Hi. What can we do for you?
I had a question about tomatoes.
Okay.
I just moved into a new house, and the people that owned it before me had tomato plants, and they're still there. And I just wanted to know what I'm supposed to do with them now or at the end of the summer. Do they grow back next year? I've never done tomatoes before.
Good question. And you know what's so exciting, Kyle, is you're not alone. That we have so many new people to growing vegetables. It's excellent. I'm just so excited to see so many people. And once you've had those fresh from the garden tomatoes, you'll never go back.
Nice.
Never. So at the end of the season, I would pull the tomatoes out just because of disease and insect problems. Find out how you can dispose of those safely in your community. Some communities will allow you to throw those away. Composting only works on disease-free materials or if you have an active compost pile. And most of us just can't get the heat up and really give it the attention it needs to really kill off those insect and disease problems. If you have enough room, if you can move your tomatoes to a different part of the garden, that's one good way to minimize and reduce future disease problems. I know someone had posted, I think it was Carrie or Carla. Carla posted a question about having a small space garden and not being able to rotate her crops. And that's what I had before. So, Kyle, if you're in the same boat, get rid of the old tomatoes. But then you may want to make sure you've got good organic matter, adding compost, working in shredded leaves into the garden in the fall that'll break down over spring. The healthier your soil, the less likely you are to get disease problems. So, you know, after you're done harvesting, after a hard freeze, you can pull those out, clean out the garden. I am one of those people that does like to incorporate organic matter into the soil in the fall or early in spring if it's finished compost, and then get my garden off to a good start. That soil prep will pay off. If you've got room, follow your tomatoes with beans or onions or something unrelated and put your tomatoes in a different spot. But they like full sun, good drainage, and enjoy the harvest. And
yeah,
welcome to gardening. You're going to be hooked.
Thank you, Kyle. You know, all of my tomato plants this year were in straw bales. I planted them. I did all straw bales, and I had such a huge amount of tomatoes. It's unbelievable.
Excellent. You know, that's a great, and so I'm going to confess to you, Larry. I did a bunch of different gardening methods. I'm doing a course for great courses, and we followed my garden, and I had straw bales, and I didn't follow the conditioning closely enough.
Oh.
And water, so this is my confession. Everybody I know that loves it, you know, you obviously did it right, followed the directions, yep, and ended up with great results. I'm looking at mine going, okay, we'll try next year, and I'll pay better attention to them. So.
Yeah, I have 2 years in a row, and I followed the rules, you know, pretty much to the letter.
And I think that's the key, and that's and the reason I'm sharing that is, you know, when we garden, we need to find a style that works for us, that it works for how we garden, how we operate. I had too many things going. I'm not making excuses, just saying if you did something and it didn't work, trust me, we've all done something that didn't work for us. And it's either try again or go, maybe that's not the style gardening for me, but my lasagna garden looked great. My raised beds were excellent. My amended beds were great. So it was just a matter of I'm gonna pay better attention next year to my straw bale.
You know, I had the straw bale, one of the straw bales, right next to the back door, and I had cherry tomato plant closest. Oh. And so every time you're in and out of the house, you're grabbing a few cherry tomatoes and popping them in your mouth, and it's a nice little treat as you walk in and out of the house.
It is, and I was growing sun gold in my garden, and I would just, I don't think they ever made it in the house, and I have a lot of them. I eat and weed, eat and weed, eat and weed, and, you know, you're right, a nice little treat, and it's good for you.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Barb in Oshkosh has a question, so let's go to Barb. Barb, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, and I just want you to know that you two are two of my favorite people.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
And my question today is, I just purchased a perennial hibiscus because it was marked down, you know, on sale right now. So it has some blossoms, it's got a ton of buds on it. And I'm not sure if I need to do anything special to protect it for the winter since I just got it now.
Yeah, you know, it's still a good time to plant. Is the plant in pretty good shape, or is it one of those that
yes,
garden? Okay, excellent. That's even better.
Very good shape.
Oh, excellent. It's a great time for planting, and it likes, you know, a bright, sunny to partial shade area, moist soil. Soggy soil, usually if it's heavy clay, like there's so much of in the Fox Valley in southeast Wisconsin, if you've got heavy clay, you want to make sure you add some compost to the area, you know, a large area around it. But otherwise, just plant it. After the ground freezes, if you feel you need to give it a little insurance, you could throw some evergreen boughs or marsh hay over the base. And then again, just be patient in the spring. It's late to get emerge. And then just, you know, maybe stake it this first year, not to hold it up, but to mark its location, and leave it stand for winter.
Okay. Thank you very much.
It, you know, fall's a great time for planting, so you should have good luck. And like you said, there are great deals out there, so it's a good time to fill up the garden.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Barb. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based gardening expert, Jason Butler, our on-air producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller for this edition of Garden Talk. One of my good friends, Melinda Meyer, Milwaukee-based gardening expert. She has more than 20 books, gardening books, including a brand new version, Minnesota and Wisconsin Month-by-Month Gardening. She's also host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and always wonderful to have her come by. And certainly, if you have questions for her, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Melinda, you're the Minnesota and Wisconsin month-by-month gardening. That's revised and new.
You bet. So one of the things we found is we thought that we'd make it easier for gardeners to follow by putting everything you need to know in January, or the main things. There's never everything you need
right.
to know in any book. But what do you do in January for your annuals, bulbs, trees, shrubs, lawns? And then in February, it's all listed. So we reorganized some things, updated some information, and we also, the companion book, the Minnesota Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide, is really my garden book for Wisconsin, but the publisher put Minnesota and Wisconsin together, and mm-hmm. I recognize that in both books. You know, there's a big difference from Milwaukee going up, you know, to Duluth, so I
sure.
made sure to call that out in both books. But then I added a lot of new cultivars and varieties. So even if you're an experienced gardener, I tried to throw some things in, some updated information, some new plants, got rid of some old plants, and just try to give them a new, you know, keep us all up to speed and get you started. There's so many plants that aren't in the book because they won't let me have that many pages to write.
And your garden moments, Melinda's garden moments, moving along well as always?
Oh, you bet. We're in about 135 markets across the country, so that's been very fun. And this year, I was mentioning we're shooting for great courses. At that class, there'll be a trees and shrub one coming out in December, and one coming out, the edibles class will come out in spring. So we're finishing up. We followed my gardens throughout the season. So I planted, I developed gardens specifically for this course. And then we were able to track down some trees and shrubs and do some pruning and do some fun things. So I'm very excited because we were able to shoot on a regular basis throughout the season. So you see the same garden, good or bad, and throughout the season. But we, you know, soil is so huge, as you know. And we did lasagna. I finally had room to do lasagna gardening, straw bale, showing my failure, lots of containers, and just a lot of different varieties and showing some of the pros and cons of each so that you can pick the method that fits best for your gardening style.
You know, we had an email from Christina who wondered about converting her yard. She wants to convert it from grass to shrubs and perennials.
Oh, and
yeah, she wonders, is this something that we should start now in fall? What's the best way to start?
No, great question. And here's a couple of options. If you don't want to use chemicals to kill out the existing grass, one of the things that's worked well for me is kind of define your bed. You know, maybe lay out a hose or a rope and get that bed the look that you want. Edge that bed. You can either rent an edger if it's a huge bed or just take a good sharp shovel. Edge the bed. And the reason we do that is so that you disconnect the grass on the outside so it can't feed the grass you're going to try to kill. Once the bed is edged, what you can do is cover it with, cut the grass really short inside the garden bed, throw down cardboard or newspaper, and cover it with mulch. You know, if you have good lawn growing, your soil's probably pretty good. Then, if you do that now, by spring, the mulch, you know, the newspaper or cardboard will break down, and then you can just peel back any wood chips that are left, dig and plant your shrubs. You've got the mulch, you've got your grass killed, it's all good. Or you can put soil on top and create a raised bed, you know, a little bit of a berm, newspaper or cardboard soil, and plant right away. You can also use a sod cutter and remove the sod, or you can kill it with Roundup if you don't mind using a total vegetation killer. Treat the grass, then get rid of the dead grass or give it time to just disintegrate and plant right away, you know, about 4 to 14 days after treatment. Check the label. It'll tell you when you can start planting. So this is a great time to either prepare the garden for planting or even prepare it and get things in the ground. As I mentioned, I started some beds earlier, never got the plants in, so it was great. The good weather, plenty of plants available, good prices, and then you're that garden's set for next spring so you can start another one come spring.
Steve wondered how to put up garlic cloves, put in garlic cloves so they come up in spring.
You know, this is, we're getting to that time. Boy, it sure feels like it today. You know, September, October, good time for planting. You, the individual cloves go just below the soil surface, about an inch deep. If you have a protected spot, it's great. One of your listeners one time followed up with me when I said garlic can be challenging. He goes, it's easy to grow. And I said, well, not everybody's as successful as you. So I always like to say, if you didn't make it the first time, give it a try. And then once the ground freezes, throw some mulch on top just to protect it. And then that way they're up. They've already put down some roots. And come spring, they're growing. And then by August, they're usually done. And you have a decent-sized bulb. So we're getting to that time. The garden center should have the garlic in. I've been trying to stay out so I don't spend more money. But I'm going back this week to look for my garlic. So we're getting to the time to start putting them in the ground. So late September, early October, good time to do it.
Nancy in Grafton is up next with a question. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling.
Well, good morning. I was listening to the Hartford radio station, and they had Bill Mays on there, and he's a gardener, and he has a landscaping business. And he said that you can take a good stalk of tomato, something that's growing really nice and sturdy, cut it off, take off the bottom third of the branches or the leaves, and put it in a pot of potting soil. Take it in when it's going to get really cold. Take it in so it doesn't freeze. He said that in January, February, you will have the most wonderful ripe tomatoes that you ever had. And I thought, I never tried that, but maybe I will this year. And another thing is about the hibiscus. Our son died back in 2000. At the funeral, we were given a hibiscus plant. That was 2000. Now, that plant has come in every winter.
Oh.
And it stays in the house, and the leaves all dry up, and they fall off. And then I clean them up. In the spring of the year, it starts to get new green leaves. I bring it downstairs. I water it a little during the winter. And I bring it outside, and every time I get this beautiful new flower, I say, hi, Leo. It is so, this is 14 years now. And that plant is still growing, and every new flower is like a resurrection. It is a promise.
Oh.
I think it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing, and it's like he's still here.
Gardening and plants are such powerful messages and a great way to honor people. My mom passed this spring, and friends bought me a Homestead Ohio Buckeye because I'm originally from Ohio, and so I planted it near the playset for my grandkids, so we see it every day, and when the kids come out to play, to visit and play, they can think of their great-grandma. And you're right, plants are very powerful, and good for you for keeping that tropical hibiscus alive, and that's a great method. Bring it inside. You know, there's two ways. Grow it like a house plant, keep it growing, keep it flowering. In spring, fertilizing if you've had problems with it blooming, or like you, letting it go almost totally dormant. Just water it enough to keep it alive in a cool, brightly lit location, and then it comes back so excellent. I just wanted to add, too, thank you for sharing. That's so wonderful, Nancy, about bringing in tomatoes. Blight is the key thing, and then fertilization. So tomatoes, they fertilize themselves, but they depend on the wind blowing them. So you need to just kind of shake the blossoms or move the pollen yourself to make sure you get some fruit forming. But, I haven't done it usually because I don't have the room for a tomato plant. But tomatoes are one thing. Some people will bring in peppers. Some will start cuttings like this so you have a smaller plant, fewer insects and diseases. A good sunny window, or better yet, some artificial light will help ensure that you have success and some good fruit to munch on. So thanks for sharing that, Nancy.
Thank you so much. I very much appreciate your call. And we have, lots of folks here. Let's go to Jasper in Wausau. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
This is my first year having a kind of a nitro-sized garden, and we have about 5 or 6, maybe like waist-high Brussels sprout plants. And I was just curious when those are going to go to, like, you know, get the fruit, the vegetable off there.
Yeah.
Good question. And I love growing Brussels sprouts in demonstration gardens because a lot of people don't know how they grow. So they ripen from the bottom up, and they're ready to pick when the bottom sprouts are about 1 inch in diameter and nice and firm. Sometimes pinching out the growing tip is, if you're not seeing a lot of development happening, pinching out the growing tips this time of year allows the plant to put the energy in those sprouts that have formed instead of growing taller. And so you might want to do that. It's also a good idea for pumpkins, melons, and tomatoes. If you're still getting those tomatoes growing, flowering, and producing fruit, trimming off that growing point has the plant put the energy into the fruit. So when those sprouts are about 1 inch in diameter, you can eat them when they're smaller, but they ripen from the bottom up. So you can either pick them from the bottom up, or if you go to the farmer's market, you know, they just usually cut the whole stalk and you buy
the whole
little of it. Exactly.
That's right. Oh, man. Melinda Meyer is our guest today. Melinda, Milwaukee-based garden guru, the author of more than 20 gardening books. Isn't it so much fun to visit with her on Garden Talk? I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and on this edition of Garden Talk, visiting today with Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based garden guru. Always great to have her along. She knows so much about such a broad range of things in the garden and the lawn and our trees. I'm always very impressed with her, and really love having her on the show. You may have a question for her, and if you do, you can join us at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Melinda, we have Jennifer's been waiting a long time from La Crosse, so let's go to her.
Okay.
Jennifer, thank you so much for waiting. What's on your mind?
Oh, not a problem. It's probably a silly, simple question, but I purchased some what they're calling Amish mums at work for a fundraiser, and I was just wondering if there's anything in particular I need to do. Are they something that gets planted in the ground or in a pot, or do they bloom again, or is this a one-time purchase?
They're calling them Amish mums.
Amish mums.
Yeah, they're really, really big mums.
I'm guessing they may be raised. I know there are a lot of Amish, great Amish greenhouse growers in our state and in Wisconsin and in Minnesota as well. And I'm wondering if they are just tagging that name on. I've not heard that cultivar. So here's my guess. I'm guessing it's a hardy mum. And hardy mums just set their bloom under longer days than the greenhouse mums. So they are the same hardy as the mum you get for Mother's Day. It's just that they'll set bloom hopefully in August or September, so you enjoy the flowers before winter comes. The problem is they're in full bloom right now, so when we put them in the ground, all the energy is going into the flowers instead of into forming roots. So here's what you can do with these. You can use them as an annual and be thrilled and just put them in a pot, enjoy them, and be good. You can plant them in the garden and understand they may or may not make it depending on the winter, but after the ground freezes, leave them stand for winter. That will increase hardiness. And then covering the plants with evergreen boughs or straw, just that little added insulation, may also help increase your chance of survival. But the real issue is that one of the problems is that they're putting their energy into the roots. Minnesota, the University of Minnesota, has been introducing lots of good mums that are hardy to zone 3. The unfortunate part is we're not seeing them in the greenhouse or in the garden centers just quite yet, at least in parts of Wisconsin. They're still a little hard to find, but Mammoth Mum is one of them. The initial trademark name was My Favorite Mum, and it was My Favorite Mum. Hardy to zone 3, they've been growing at the Green Bay Botanic Garden for years, saw them up in Minnesota. So those are mums that were bred particularly to be hardy. So I'm not sure if you know, I'm wondering if that's not so much a cultivar variety name as crediting who grew them.
Right.
But, you know, you might want to double check that. But either way, get them in the ground if you're going to keep them over winter. Mulch this first year just because they're putting the energy to the flowers. I buy mums all the time, and here's my philosophy on mums and asters. I enjoy them. They're beautiful. If I put them in the garden and they make it, I'm an excellent gardener. If they die, I was planning on using them as an annual. So you can use that line too, Jennifer.
There you go, Jen.
I may have to do that. Yeah, they're gorgeous. They're very, very large and very full and lots and lots of blooms.
I think it's worth a try. You know,
sure.
I think if you love them and you've got a spot to put them, I think it's worth popping them in the garden. You have nothing to lose. You're going to enjoy them now, and hopefully you'll get to enjoy them. Then in spring, as the new growth comes, we're thinking positively, you'll cut off the old dead stumps.
Here you go. Good luck. Call us back next year and let us know.
Exactly.
David in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. I've always had a small herb garden outdoors and decided to venture out into strawberries and jalapenos this year. The jalapenos, I don't know what to do. I'm now going into the fall, and the same thing with the strawberries. They never bloomed. I bought them thinking they were a multiple fruit beyond the season. However, they never ever produced any fruit.
Okay. Are they in good sunlight?
Yeah. They are in about 8 to 10 hours a day.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's hope they weren't mismarked, because there's nothing more disappointing than getting your crop in June and being done if you were expecting them all summer. You know, what I would do is after the ground freezes, you know, the strawberries set their flower buds in fall, the June bearers especially. And so just a light mulch of straw or marsh hay will just help insulate them, especially if they're in an exposed area. You might want to do that, but it's after the ground freezes, because the goal is to keep it consistently cold. For your jalapeno peppers, when they're fully red, they're ripe, you can dry them. You can. I was thinking about making some chili ristras, and then I looked at the directions and went, I think I'm just going to dry them and make flakes and give those as Christmas gifts this year. And some people will even just pull the whole plant out at the end of the season and then let them dry on the plant. Removing them as they ripen, you can dry them in the oven or in a food dehydrator. I was listening to your show, Larry, when you had the expert from UW-Madison talking about canning and freezing, and I have a lot of produce this year, and I'm a little rusty on some of my canning strategies. So,
that was a good show.
Yeah, it was. And UW has some good information. The National Home Food Preservation website is excellent, too, for drying, canning, freezing, fermenting. I'm doing a lot of fermenting this year, not alcohol, but sauerkraut and pickles.
I was thinking of pickling them, but now the dried idea sounds like it could be a better venture.
Well, you know, you might want to try a little bit of both, but the drying there, actually Melinda's Garden Moment's coming up in a month, but I will post, I think I can post a link on Larry's site to
yes.
the tip.
Excellent.
And I will just, I'll do that. It's not on our website yet, but as soon as it's up there, talk about drying, or I'll find a way to get the information out there to Larry with some help from Judy or his Jason. So, yeah, drying it, there's lots of good information out there on the web, but it's an easy way, and you can use it throughout the winter to season things. They dry pretty easily.
Yep. There you go.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks
good
so
luck,
much.
David.
I'm looking at my Facebook page, and through my blurry eyes, I can see a note from a photo of a pumpkin. Nathan had a blossom end rot on his pumpkins and wonders what to do to avoid it in future years.
Yeah, blossom end rot can occur on squash, which pumpkins are a type of squash, melons and things. And here's a couple things. One is it's very similar to tomatoes, where you've got moisture imbalance. They're sitting on wet soil, and this year, boy, the soil was wet a long time. So I remember when I used to run the community garden program in Milwaukee, gardeners would take the lids from, like, margarine tubs and set their fruit on that. Gardener Supply has these cool things called melon cradles, and they're kind of rings of plastic with a spike, and you set them in the ground and set your melon on it. So not only do you elevate it, but you get good airflow, because sometimes the rot happens because the soil's wet, the pumpkin sits on it, and you can get problems that way. There's also a fungal disease that will move in through the fruit, the flower. And so when you're noticing a lot of those problems, and I know it's putsy, but if you go out and you notice as the flower on the female, you'll have a little mini pumpkin, the female flower, is it starting to wilt, knocking that off the forming fruit after it's been pollinated and starts to wilt, makes it harder for that disease to move in. It's not as easy of an entryway. So removing that wilted flower will also help reduce disease problems, that blossom end rot. So it's kind of, you know, with your pumpkins too, since you're probably growing just a few key ones, walking through on it every couple of days and just checking them, that will help a lot.
Absolutely. Anne in West Bend has a question. Hi, Anne. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have one question, and if time, a second one. I have a hydrangea that I have tried in three different spots, and I can't get it to bloom, period.
Do you know what kind it is? Is it an endless summer?
It's an endless summer, yep.
Yeah. Endless summer have caused gardeners a lot of frustration.
Yes.
They're supposed to bloom.
Okay, then I don't feel so bad.
No, I'll tell you my story. I was going to dig mine up. I'm walking out to the front yard, and I was going to dig it up, and it was blooming. You know? So I think death breath works very well. But what I found over time is that moisture, you know, making sure not soggy, but keeping the soil moist spring through summer, that helps a lot. And then Milorganite fertilizer. And the reason I recommend Milorganite, it's a low nitrogen, so it doesn't promote leaf and stem growth at the expense of flowers. But more importantly, what they found with research is when the microorganisms work on releasing the fertilizer from the nutrients from the Milorganite, something happens that also causes some of the phosphorus and potassium bound in the soil. We tend to have high to excessive levels, not available to the plant. So when those microorganisms are working, it's releasing some of that phosphorus from the soil, making it available to the plants and helping promote bloom. One application, okay. That's all you need in the spring, one application. Okay. And I've only had one gardener come back and tell me it didn't work, and I've been recommending this for like 5 years. So it might be worth a shot. It's an easy...
Try it.
Yeah.
Do
and
I have one more question?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, I had real severe blight in my tomato plants, and I'm wondering what I have to do. I rotate where I put my tomatoes every year, but what do I is there anything I have to do to that soil to get it, quote-unquote, out of the soil? If it's coming from the soil, I don't know what blight is, but I just dug the plants up because it was horrendous. So is there any kind of thing I need to do to avoid it in the future?
You know, I just I just posted on Larry's Facebook a comment on a couple of people with tomato sites and put links in, one to a UW Extension, one to Missouri, and one to another place, I think it was Cornell or Purdue or Iowa State, that showed some pictures. Now, Septoria leaf spots, what I see a lot, yellow leaves, little brown spots, starts at the bottom, leaves drop off, fruit are fine, but it's the ugliest looking tomato. That's Septoria leaf spot. No resistant varieties. Rotating, mulching, staking, and towering your tomatoes will help with all your disease problems. Copper-containing fungicides, which are considered organic, check the label, okay? Some formulations may have other things in it than copper. As soon as you see the disease, and then repeat throughout the season. So it gets putsy. Removing the soil is difficult because you can't drop it back in. I don't think it's real practical for most of us. So amending the soil with compost, making sure your soil's really in good condition, will help reduce the problems. There are some blight-resistant tomatoes, a few, not a lot of varieties, that are easily attainable. But if it's late blight, you know, because it comes and wipes out, and that's severe. That's when you definitely leave that garden vacant and definitely do preventative treatment, because that can be not only a problem for you but other gardeners in the area. So it's probably early blight or Septoria leaf spot. This cool, wet weather, great for diseases. So check Larry's Facebook. I just posted those.
Mm-hmm.
on his site. And if I haven't finished, I don't think I've finished the one yet, so it'll be up in a minute at the next when I finish here. But, yeah, good cleanup in the fall, good soil prep, mulching, staking for better airflow, good bright sunlight. And then if you choose to treat, remove infected leaves, and it's an ongoing process. And then choose your product wisely and read and follow label directions, of course.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I had powdery mildew this year on my squash, and that was too bad. One little squash.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you bring up a good point. Mine just kind of moved into my pumpkin patch here this last week, so I'm okay. I was lucky enough that I got my cucumbers, not so much, but I think I'm done with cucumbers anyway.
Yeah.
But powdery mildew, as Larry is mentioning, blocks the sunlight. So the problem with that disease is it prevents light from reaching the leaves. The leaves eventually yellow and brown, so you get fewer squash, pumpkins, or melons produced because they just don't have the energy. Good cleanup, kind of monitoring. You know, Cornell found baking soda works quite well. Baking soda with either insecticidal soap or horticultural oil mixed in water, but it's regular application. So it's one of those things where you go, I'll just maybe accept what I get and go to the farmer's market if I need to.
Yep.
Or, yeah, you know.
That was my tactic.
That was your solution.
Yeah. Oh, what a mess. Marion in Madison has a question. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have some tomato plants that I put in pots. I was given some seeds, and I didn't get them planted until probably the 1st of June. So right now my plants are about 4 feet tall, and they have many little tomatoes and blossoms on them. And I want to be able to extend their life long enough to harvest something out of this. And my questions for you are, should I just move them close to the house at night every night, or should I bring them inside? How can I extend them long enough to harvest some of these lovely-looking Roma tomatoes?
Oh, I know, isn't it? That's the bad part of this, you know, of the garden season. I'm a huge fan of floating row covers. You don't need construction. You just, and I did some really late season planting, some greens and root crops that I'm going to have to cover, and hoping I'll be harvesting at Thanksgiving from my garden outside. Those things take it cool. Tomatoes, on the other hand, need it warm. Floating row covers are fabrics that let air, light, and water through, but trap the heat around the plants, and most of them will insulate your plants down to 24 degrees. Now, not only do you want to cover them to protect from frost, but keeping them warm will speed up the maturing and also improve the flavor. So you might want to keep them in a more sheltered location where they're getting good sun, and you might want to consider either buying the fabric where you drape it over the plant. Gardner Supply, again, has these pop-up tent-like things that you can put over big plants that you can protect them, or you can make your own. Basically, you just want to make sure there are no rips and tears. Cover the plant, anchor that fabric on the soil, or tuck it under your pot, and that will help keep things warm, and that can extend your season. The nice thing about a container, you can move it out in warm days, bring it in, depending on how big and heavy it is, when it's chilly at night. But, you know, I know some people that pop things in wagons, or they'll have kids' winter saucer sleds, and they'll just drag their plants in and out. I love pot lifters. They're these strappy things with two handles, so you can move plants much easier. So you might want to, you know, either make it easy to move it in and out, or better yet, just cover it up and you can leave it in place a little bit easier on the back that way.
Absolutely. And Robert in Eagle River, hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Yes, I have a question on wisteria. I heard your earlier conversation about this plant. About 15 years ago, my wife planted a plant, and she was told it was wisteria. It grows well. The plant gets about 25, 30 feet high.
Right.
It gets beautiful blooms on it in the spring, late spring usually.
Yeah.
It's a fairly brittle tree. I have one concern with it. It's like an invasive species almost. New shoots coming up all over the yard off the roots.
Yeah.
Right. And you bring up a good point. You, when you mention wisteria to people in the South, they'll often throw things at you because, you know, they'll talk about how they pull down porches because not only are they vigorous growers, they get big woody stems, and they'll send out runners, just like trumpet vine will. And I just heard from a friend who has a passion vine that's taken over her yard. So here's what the only thing you can do if you don't want to kill the main plant is just cut those runners off just below the ground. Many garden centers will sell root pruning saws because you don't want to ruin your good saw by cutting into the soil. That dulls the blade. But if you cut below the ground, that helps to stop it. You could do some root pruning to disconnect the runners from the main plant and then treat them. But if you treat the runners with a total vegetation killer, it goes through the underground stem and will kill the parent plant. So unfortunately, if you want to keep the parent plant, you're really destined to just keep pruning out those runners that appear where you don't want them.
There you go.
Yeah, sorry. I wish I had an easier solution, and I'm sure there are a few gardeners wishing theirs were doing as well as yours.
Yes, thanks again for calling. Joanne in Jacksonport, hi.
Hi. Is this a good time to divide daylilies?
Oh, excellent time to divide daylilies. Good, tough plants. You can do it spring. You can do it fall. I've done them in the middle of winter, kind of like hostas, as long as you give them good post-transplant care. But the sooner you do it, the more time it has to put some good root growth down, get reestablished before winter.
There you go. Thanks very much
for mums.
Oh, mums?
Yeah. I order my mums from Superior View Farms in Bayfield. They're field-grown. And they come with roots that you wouldn't believe.
Oh, excellent. Well, great. Thank you for sharing. That's wonderful, Joanne. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we have, let's see, I'm actually having trouble reading this.
That makes me feel better. I'm about 6 inches from my monitor with my reading glasses on.
Oh, man. Should Annabelle Hydrangeas, should we prune them before the first frost?
You know what? Leave them grow. The longer the leaves are on, you definitely want to wait until after they freeze, the Annabelle hydrangeas. I like to leave mine up for winter. I think they look nice in the garden. Some people think they look messy. But at least wait till they're dormant before you do any pruning.
And someone said they like to take their tomato plants out of the ground and hang them in the garage or the basement to ripen the fruit.
Great idea. I have not done that, but I might be doing it this year. So, you know, and what you're doing is you're not going to have all of them. They'll be at different stages, but what an easy way to harvest quickly before that killing frost and get them inside and get them protected. So that's a great idea.
Sarah wondered if her, on her herb garden, whether or not a rosemary bush would survive the winter.
Not outside.
No.
Not outside. I did have one woman, though I didn't see it, but she swears hers made it. It was up against the house in southeast Wisconsin, but she's the only person that has ever told me. Most of us have trouble overwintering. Mine made it this winter. I was so excited, but I put it under artificial lights.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, so, you know, and even if it dies, it still smells good. So you can just put it behind your other plants and rub it once in a while and get that fragrance. But, yeah, it's not going to make it outside, I'm afraid.
Melinda, thank you so much.
We look forward to
your next visit. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a great rest of your season. Get out there and keep harvesting.
Okay, I will do that. Melinda Myers, take a look at her new book. It's Minnesota and Wisconsin Month-by-Month Gardening. And go to her website. We have a link to it on my Facebook page. She's got a bunch of cool things coming up, including, I believe, a trip that you might be able to participate in. So go to her Facebook page or her webpage for more on that.